Good evening, everyone. I'm Linor Mudu. Welcome to Health Chat. The United Nations Sustainable Development Goal 5 aims to achieve gender equality and empower all women and girls by the year 2030. Observers say there have been some improvement over the years in ensuring women's well-being globally. However, access to education and proper health services, feeding their children, and equal pay are some challenges some women continue to face in parts of the world, regardless of race, religion, or where they live. But in many communities, women are taking some bold steps to change that. Today, we will discuss the well-being of women through the lenses of our guest. She's award-winning photographer and author, Christina Kessler. An accomplished world traveler, she has met women in many parts of the world and heard their stories and life, challenges and accomplishments. Christina shares her experience in her latest book entitled Tales of an Ikut Swami. Christina Kessler, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm very honored to be on your program.
Oh, it's great to have you on the show. Listen, you have been traveling around the world like a real ambassador. And I think you've traveled more than some ambassadors. And
I think so, too.
Your story is fascinating. And as you were traveling, you also recorded and talk to women, children, men, people around the world. And one of the fascinating things about your travels is that you have taken the time to put together this book that I've been reading and I've been laughing. And sometimes it's just a very, very interesting book to read. So let me start with the beginning. Ikut Swami, Tales of an Ikut Swami. That's the title of the book. What does it mean?
Well, when we lived in Indonesia many years ago, Joe's secretary brought my passport home, and they had put as my profession Ikut Swami. So I said, oh, does that mean I'm going to be a writer or a photographer? Or, I mean, you know, is that what that means? And she said, oh, no, it's better. It means follows the husband. So I have to say I pitched a fit. I was not happy, and she told me, well, get over it, because it's not going anywhere. And so
and then you got used to it?
Yeah.
Yes, now it's the title of your
book. It took me about 6 months.
6 months to get over it.
I started thinking about all the things I was able to do because I was following Joe, and I was free to choose and find and meet and come up with my own project. So
yeah.
I thank him for that, and he's hoping to be an Ikut Bibi one day.
So Ikut Swami wasn't a bad thing after all, right?
No, not at all.
That's great. Listen, we want to talk about women. I know women, it's the big, big topic, right? There's so much to talk
Correct.
About. However, through your experience, right, I wanted you to share with us what you've seen as you were meeting women around the world. You've traveled so much, as I mentioned earlier. What is your observation in terms of women's well-being? And first of all, how far have we come? We've heard so much, so many times about some women going through some inequality and issues around women that we hear every day. How far have we come, though?
Oh, that's a very good question. I spent 28 years traveling, living, working in the developing world. I've been to all seven continents. I've been to 110 countries. And in every one of those places, I connected with women because I think women connect like automatically because we share the bonds of what being a woman is all about. And I just, you know, I've seen women in Sudan, I've seen women in Egypt, in South Africa, in Indonesia, in Bangladesh, women all over the world. And in every single case, it's like, it's the women that's the force of the community and the women that's the glue of the family. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I wrote this book. I thought it was really time to celebrate women around the world.
That's fantastic. And there seems to be really a lot when you look at the way things are happening, especially recently. It seems to be a movement around women and women empowerment and their rights, and especially with the Me Too movement, which we won't get into. But when you say that one of the things that you were able to get from your travel is what being a woman is about. That's one of the things that they shared. What is it? What does being a woman, what is it about for some women? Because it may differ from one culture to another, from one country to another. What did you find?
Well, I found that, and we've really been in some of the most difficult places in the world. And I was always amazed by how women, who generally are in charge of collecting firewood, collecting drinking water, cooking meals, doing the laundry, all the things work in their fields, that what made them strong was their teamwork. Because I remember in one chapter in my book seeing this group of women walking across the desert in Sudan, and they were singing, and they had huge bundles on their heads, but they were enjoying life. And I think that's what gives women their power. They know how to make the best of their circumstances, generally.
Yeah. So when talking about your book, when you started to put all these stories down and your memory, trying to remember as much as possible, what was significant as you remembered these women, as you remembered these stories? Because I have to say, the cover of the book is beautifully made.
And
it's really a unique way of doing it, because I see you have put different pictures of different women that represent many parts of the world. So what was something that you found significant?
Well, the cover, first, I want to give a big thank you shout out to Frank Welfins. He's my webmaster, and he also helped me design this cover. I have over 300 photographs of women around the world, and so I was trying to make that final selection based on women's stories that were in the book and countries that are in the book. And, you know, what's interesting is I wrote each one of these chapters as the event happened. So it wasn't like I was trying to dig back and come up with details. They were all there. And what makes it more interesting is that after Hurricanes Irma and Maria, we had no electricity for 93 days.
In the Virgin Islands?
In our house. We were lucky. We came on sooner than a lot of people, I think.
Okay.
But then my computer, I had to get somebody to come in and revive my computer. And then once the computer came back on, every day a different chapter was just showing back up on my computer. Mm. And so I said, okay, now is the time, if ever there was. So, so I'm very proud of this book. I'm very excited. I've never written for adults before.
You are a children's book
yeah,
author.
Correct. I've got 10 kid books out.
Okay. So then looking at, let's talk about some of the specific stories, because as I was reading, I mean, you went to Zanzibar, Mali, Ethiopia, Sudan. I mean, we mentioned that already, that you've traveled to many countries. Give us some examples, some stories. Would you share with us a story where you really saw, maybe you learned something? Because when we travel, when, at least for some people, traveling and meeting people, people that are open to discovering other cultures, there are two folds to this. One is you learn about these people. And then the other thing is maybe you teach them something. You have the opportunity to teach them something. So talk to us about, first of all, some of the lessons that you were able to learn as you met women from different cultures.
Well, it was really, you know, for me, it was such an amazing, rare opportunity, because every place we went, I was able to sit back, figure out what I wanted to do, meet the women locally that wanted to, you know, make a change in their culture and have the opportunity to to make something happen to improve the quality of life for women. Mm-hmm. And I met women in Ethiopia that really blew my socks off, quite honestly. Rahel Makuria, Shittai Estaways, Mumita Gashu. Mumita is probably the most amazing person I ever met. I met her when we were doing an article in a magazine that we started, Rahel and I started, and Shittai, called Women to Women. Mm-hmm. And she had been a fistula. We were doing an article on fistula, which is a condition women get from a variety of reasons. But Mumita had been a fistula victim. She had been locked up in a shed because she was leaking urine and she smelled. One woman got her out of her shed and she walked for 2 days to get to a road. And she rode a bus that people complained about her, but the bus driver kept her on. He may have had a relative who has experienced the same thing. And she went to the fistula hospital in Addis Ababa, where she went from patient. They knew she could never go home because she was damaged irreparably. Mm-hmm. But she went from patient to janitor to kitchen help to cleaning the operating room, to handing the doctors their tools to during surgeries, to stopping a young medical student from making a mistake during the surgery, to telling a doctor about an idea she had for improving the process. Mm-hmm. And he took it and ran with it, and it changed lives. And so she told me this whole story very humbly, very honestly. And then at the end, she said, oh, I have to go. I have a class. And I said, oh, who are you teaching today? And she said, oh, no, I'm learning to read and write.
Mm.
Now, okay. If that's not amazing, I don't know what is.
That's amazing. And let's just mention that a lot of the stories that we're talking about are stories of some women in developing countries that you met. Of course, not all women around the world go through the same challenges, but this is a very specific group that we are discussing, and you are sharing your story and your experience with what you lived basically through your journey. Now, I also wanted to mention quickly before we go on break that obstetric fistula is what you were discussing, what you were talking about, and it is a condition that it's an abnormal opening in the woman's genital tract. And for the people who don't know what a fistula is, okay. So, Christina, we will continue the discussion. We have to take a short break, and when we come back, we will have more on Tales of an Ikutswami with author Christina Kessler. So it's time to take a short break. Don't go away. When we come back, we will continue our discussion. But first, the news with Gifleury Yedidia.
The World Food Program warns that the climate change will have a devastating impact on agriculture and the ability of people to feed themselves. Conflicts and the increase in natural disasters are also responsible for the augmentation of the chronic food shortage. WFP says this year 821 million people went to bed hungry. That's 11 million more than last year. WFP says number of climate disaster has more than doubled, driving more people to flee their homes and getting exposed to hunger. Furthermore, a data from 6 leading UN agencies show a bulk of losses and damages in food system is due to drought, and most of the disastrous event take place in Africa. The World Health Organization says it is having a meeting on Wednesday to determine whether Congo's last Ebola outbreak constitute a global public health emergency. This is Congo's 10th Ebola outbreak, but it is the first time the virus has appeared in the far northeast an area labeled as war zone by health workers due to the active rebel activities in the region. Congo Health Minister says that the virus has affected 179 and claimed the lives of 104. WHO warns that the risk of regional spread is very high due to the heavy travels to neighboring Uganda. Finally, doctors warns that worldwide cesarean section use has nearly doubled in two decades and has reached epidemic proportion in some countries. It is estimated that the operation, a vital surgical procedure when complications occur during birth, is necessary 10 to 15% of the time. The research published in Lancet found that in at least 15 countries, more than 40% of the births are performed using the practice, often on wealthier women in the private facilities. The European researchers say C-sections may be marketed by clinics as easy way to get birth, but they are not without risks. Among other things, they suggest better education, more midwifery care, and improved labor planning as way of ensuring C-sections are only performed when medically necessary. And that's the wrap-up of your latest health news.
Want to relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. I'm Heather Maxwell. I know good music. And Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free Pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa, your weekend destination.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll talk about Africa's land ownership and the challenge of land reform. We'll examine Africa's land redistribution and the fundamental issue of land inequality. On the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Welcome back to Health Chat. For those of you joining us late, tonight we have an exclusive interview with author Christina Kessler and a photographer as well about her newly released book, Tales of an Ikutswami. Christina, again, your book is very interesting to read. And one of the chapters that you entitled Zanzibar, We Are the Same, a very interesting story about your experience in Tanzania. Talk to us about why you called it We Are the Same. How did you experience that?
Well, we were in Zanzibar. It was always on my list since I was like 10 years old of places I needed to go. And one day there were all these women. I had noticed that they were harvesting seaweed out of the ocean during the spring tides, the low spring tide, which went way, way out. And each woman had set up a pattern of sticks in the sand, tied little pieces of seaweed to them, and then as the tide came back in, the seaweed grew, and then when they came to the next spring tides, they could go out, harvest, and take their seaweed to sell. And so I spent the day with these women, you know, and we laughed a lot. I gave, at one point, this one woman, Nyanza, that I talked to the most in my kind of lame Swahili, but we still could communicate. And she told me that this was so much better than working on the land because it wasn't as backbreaking as, you know, over your hoe all day and digging and whatnot. And so, excuse me, she said her problem, though, was her eyes, the glare from the water. So I gave her my sunglasses, and she put them on, and every single woman there started laughing. So we passed the sunglasses around to everyone so that they could see each other in Muzungu's, a white woman's sunglasses.
Muzungu is white woman in Swahili.
In Swahili, yes. And, well, Muzungu is white person, but in this case, we'll
call
it white
person
woman.
Rather, not white woman. A white person,
yeah.
That's right.
Yes. Yeah, and so she after she gave everyone a chance with the glasses, they all put their bundles on their heads and were walking down the beach. And so I asked her, I said, can I take half of that, you know, one end of that bundle that you're carrying on your head and walk the beach with you? Mm-hmm. So I walked back to town with them, back to their village. And as we parted ways, she said, you know, you may not be, you may be white and I may be black, but we are the same woman. Mm. So that was a very intense and wonderful moment for me.
That's interesting. And in terms of cultural exchange, I mean, that obviously was a definitely an exchange there in culture. But personally, you talked about the Swahili language, which is something that you learned somehow. And
yeah.
You know, I'm sure you know.
Peace Corps.
Yeah, oh, yes. Okay. You know more Swahili than I do, that's for sure. So, what when it comes to culture, what have you learned in whether it's in Ethiopia or Sudan or Mali or another country, even outside of Africa, what type of culture have you been able to embrace where today you still kind of live it and experience it in your daily life or part of your daily life?
Yeah, well, I would say that the things that I got from 19 years in Africa, and we lived in very, very difficult countries. We were in Sudan during the war. We were in Mozambique during the war. We were in Ethiopia during one of their wars. There were always these big challenges. And the thing that I learned was looking at life from the positive view, because that's what all these women taught me, because that's what they did, and that's how they got through all their challenges every single day. And the power of women working together.
Yes. And also the story of resilience is really a big part of some of these stories. As I was reading it through the book, I see a lot of many stories of resilience and really standing up against all odds. Would you agree?
Yeah. You know, the thing is that if you decide that, you know, you're not going to make it, or you can't make it, or you don't want to fight and try and make it, then you probably won't. But if you have this resilient nature, which is what struck me about every place I was, then you have the strength to carry on, the strength to do what you want to do, and, you know, and to make a better life for your kids. And that's what I saw in women everywhere we were the whole time. They were making an effort to make sure their kids were in school, giving their kids a future. And so for me, that was a real exciting and humbling message that I try to hang on to.
Okay. Now, there's one thing that I often say when we talk about women's issues and women's empowerment. I always say that we cannot talk about women's empowerment without the men. You can't leave the men behind. You have to bring men into the picture so they can be part of the solution. What is your take on, that's a bit general, but you can specify the role that men can play in settings where some women are still experiencing challenges, whether it's equality or access to care, for example. In your experience, what kind of role have you seen men play in terms of being part of the solution?
Wow, that's a big one. That's a big question. I can remember, like, when Rahel and Shittai and I, we started a program that we produced a magazine called Women to Women that was written by Ethiopian women for Ethiopian women. And one of the first responses we got to our magazine was from a man saying, oh, you have a lot of nerve. You cut us out of this.
Ah, and, okay.
yeah. And we were like, oh, that's a big surprise for a response. And so then we started, you know, we let some men
contribute.
One time.
Okay.
Yeah, one time. We had a page called The Day in the Life Of, and where women just wrote about their daily lives. And we had, I think, one time we let a man get involved in it. I'm trying to think of situations where I saw village men really step up and say, well, what about the women? Mm-hmm. And I can't come up with one of them right now. I can't think of one instance.
All right.
You know, the improvements in women's lives come from the strength of the women.
Of the women, yes. And you have some men that are also supportive, some husbands, fathers, brothers. In certain circumstances, you have to also acknowledge the men that are there to help women in different scenarios, if I will. But, of course, this does not discount the fact that women have, over the years, taken ownership of their own struggles and really fought to see improvement. And there's still a lot that needs to be done, right? Wouldn't you agree?
That's for sure. And I haven't really been back to Africa recently, but we are going in August for 6 to 9 months. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm not saying every man is a bad guy. I'm just saying that a lot of women really moved forward because they just worked together to, you know, create. Okay, here's an example. When we were in this place in Sudan, mm-hmm. and my husband worked for CARE for 20 years, and we were really out in the middle of no man's land, and they were having this village meeting, and it was about how the men, you know, they had been given certain opportunities and they hadn't really stepped up to the plate. And the women in the village, they had been given hoes, they had been given small loans, they had all started little businesses on their own. They had, you know, taken this advantage, which if a woman is given an advantage in the third world, she tends to grab it and run with it if it's going to improve the life of her family. Mm-hmm. And these women, you know, they said, well, for the women, so far, 93% of your loans have been paid back. For the men, it was something like 20%. And so I couldn't contain myself, and I just had to scream, Yahoo, women! You know, and even though they didn't speak English, they definitely got the message. And that night, two women walked for 2 hours to bring me a fried chicken and hard-boiled eggs to thank me for my outburst.
That's really funny.
I put them in the car that I had been riding in, and they got home in 20 minutes in an air-conditioned car. So it was hard to tell who was happier that night.
That's great. And the book is Tales of an Ikutswami. Well, we're running out of time, but I wanted to ask you this. In your book toward the end, you talk about two African proverbs that really speak to you and remind you of your experience. Can you tell us one of the two proverbs and why you would choose that to say goodbye?
Okay. I think my favorite one is that if you go alone, you'll go fast, but if you go together, you'll go far.
Yes.
And that is exactly the life that I've led by being with my husband, Joe. You know, I think that anybody who can work in a team situation, whatever that team is, mm-hmm. you have a better chance of success with numbers than success alone.
Absolutely.
And, yeah, you know, so that's my, oh my goodness, I'm so thankful
to
be on your show.
Thank you so much. It was great to have you on the program today.
Okay, thank you very much for this opportunity and this invitation.
Absolutely.
You rock! Just like
thank
all
you.
The other women in my books.
Thank you. Christina Kessler is author of the book Tales of an Ikutswami, and we thank her for joining us today. The book is available online on her website and other platforms also. Her website is Christina Kessler. You can Google her. For more on today's topic, check us out online at facebook.com/VOA Health. Chat. I'm your host, Lenore Moudou in Washington, with producer Bon Satoufa, Guy Fleury, Yedidia with the news, and engineer Alfredo. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.
This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. Progress